Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here are your hosts, Anna Hastert and Dustin Hoffman.
And we're back for yet another episode of Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Anna Hastert, your host this week, joined by Dustin Hoffman. Dustin, how are you doing?
You know, doing good. Survived Thanksgiving. I will be on the treadmill and eating leftovers for at least 6 months. But, always worth it spending time with family and friends. It's always a good time. Hopefully everybody out there had a good Thanksgiving as well.
Yeah, I survived Thanksgiving as well. I wore my stretchy pants. That way I could indulge in as much food as possible on Thanksgiving Day and was able to kind of lay back and lay low on Friday. Typically, my family goes Black Friday shopping.
I was going to ask you, are you one of those that plans and has like the whole attack plan too? Or
yeah, usually we have a plan set out about what store we start at. And every year it's the same. We always start out at Walmart and then we come to Des Moines and finish up our shopping here. But this year we decided that we didn't really need that much this year.
Yeah.
We kind of have everything that we need, nothing that we were really looking for gift-wise for others this year. So we just hit up a couple stores and it was actually really nice. I'm not one that functions well on low amounts of sleep, so I was very thankful for the extra couple hours of sleep that I received.
Yeah, we just had to hit like two small gifts ourselves, but they were a Black Friday deal. So it's like, I'll go out. I'm the early morning person anyway, we all know. So I'll just go out, get them, and I'll go back to bed.
Yeah, well, Dustin, so it's been a shortened week
yes.
here because of Thanksgiving and Black Friday, spending lots of time with family. But there's still things that we covered this week. We still had news every day here Monday through Friday and this weekend. A lot of things still happening. Some things that we're watching out for are the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, hoping to get that passed before the end of the year. But things aren't looking too promising with the impeachment hearings, as well as a deadline for a government shutdown. But we're still hopeful. In my segment here later, I'm talking to Nick Giordano with the National Pork Producers Council, who actually believes that we will see this pass by 2020. So fingers crossed. But Dustin, what are some other things that we've been keeping an eye out for here on the shortened holiday week?
You know, a lot of it has been just like you said, watching the trade and hoping that goes through. I did do a story earlier this week about a soy-based motor oil that's hit the market. You can check it out, iowaagnet.com. Right now, only available in two weights, so it's going to be more for your light duty, your cars, your trucks, your pickups and stuff like that. But it's a 5W20, 5W30, but they've run tests. Department of Defense has helped run tests on it. Plus, they also ran it through a taxi cab fleet in Las Vegas and got good results in that figure. You know, in that heat, that's some pretty extreme conditions. So we have some more on that that the United Soybean Board was involved in. But it's basically, like you said, it's been watching trade. It's been watching the things we've been watching for the last couple of weeks and hoping. Governor Reynolds did issue an extension of her proclamation for harvest truck traffic and also for propane hours of service. So that's some big news as well.
All right. Well, let's kick it over to Nick Giordano. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi this week said, "We, House Democrats, are within reach of a substantially improved U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement for America's workers." Pelosi then went on to add, "Now we need to see our progress in writing from the trade representative for final review." The congressional schedule dwindles as we approach a new year. Unfortunately, passage of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement does not look promising after Thanksgiving break, as the House of Representatives will have their sights set on the impeachment process and another government shutdown deadline. A National Pork Producers Council representative, however, believes the agreement will be put to vote this year. Nick Giordano, Vice President and Counsel for Government Affairs, holds out hope for an agreement, which looks to greatly benefit United States pork producers.
It's very simple. It's critically important for U.S. pork producers, and it's easily illustrated by the fact that last year, according to Dr. Dermot Hayes of Iowa State University, the retaliation Mexico put on U.S. pork because of U.S. tariffs on Mexican metal took $12 off the price of every hog sold in the United States of America. So obviously, Mexico is a really important market. It's the number one issue last year, the Mexican retaliation that we heard from producers about. I mean, you know, we heard from them on China and ASF and a lot of things, but the top of the list was, you know, it's always about the bottom line. And Mexico really hurt. The flip side of that, we worked very hard with the administration and just expressing concern and the impact this was having on producers. And it was a big deal when the administration announced that it had reached a deal with Mexico and Canada to resolve the metal issue and that the punitive tariffs were coming off. Really big deal. And now, you know, going forward on USMCA, as I said, that's exhibit A on why North American trade's important for our producers. We're for USMCA. We're for trade. It's good for them. And we're pushing for a vote this year. We've been very engaged in USMCA. We've had our fly-ins this year, you know, producers lobbying in the district. Of course, D.C.-based staff always on the Hill on the issue. But we kind of rolled out another part of our campaign with It's Pork O'Clock Somewhere, which is a feel-good campaign that focuses on pork is a food that brings people together and brings people together in all three countries, and it celebrates Mexican pork dishes, U.S. pork dishes, Canadian pork dishes, and it also underscores that it's not just pork producers in the United States, but pork producers in Canada and Mexico that support USMCA. MPPC is working hard, as are many other groups, to push for a vote this year on USMCA. The votes are there. I think it's going to happen, but we'll see. It's very important to us. And then, of course, China is another larger-than-life issue. And, you know, we were under the 20% punitive tariffs in Mexico. That was horrible. But the punitive tariffs in China were taking $8 off the price of every hog sold in the U.S. So it was really tough last year. Certainly no panacea for producers today. Any producer will tell you that. But we're a heck of a lot better off than we were this time last year, and MPPC's position in China is very simple. We want 5 years of zero tariff access to China, and we think we have a good case, and that's because it was an unprecedented opportunity for pork to be sold in China with African swine fever there. China is the biggest producer and biggest consumer of pork in the world. Pork is one of the most significant factors in the consumer price index in China. So prices already are headed up. They got to manage food price inflation. So we know they're going to import more pork and more protein. We want it to be from us. And when you think about, okay, what country is poised to supply really big quantities of safe, high-quality, affordable pork? It's the United States of America. Now, obviously, that's going to benefit our producers. That's going to benefit the Chinese because they got to manage food price inflation. And I get that for pork and other food and ag products, they're looking all over the world for other supplies. Yeah, okay. But, you know, zeroing out the tariffs on pork for 5 years, I think, would go a long way to helping diffuse some of the tension surrounding the U.S.-China discussions. And it helps the U.S. because it's not just putting money in the industry's pocket, which, thank you very much. I mean, that's important. That's why we get paid to work on behalf of our producers. But it's going to drive employment, help rural communities in the United States. But bigger picture for the United States of America, because of this unprecedented sales opportunity with pork in China today, because of ASF, the U.S. pork industry can single-handedly put a huge dent in the U.S.-China trade imbalance. So we think there are compelling reasons. You know, is it going to happen? I don't know. We're knocking on doors, and obviously the Trump administration is very receptive. They want to sell more pork in China. They want to help pork producers. It's really up to the Chinese, and I think most listeners understand that, boy, this is a complicated discussion with China that's multifaceted. We're talking about an ascendant China and what's the relationship going forward going to be between the two nations and forced technology transfer and a lot of big questions, big for China, big for the U.S. And look, we want to be part of the solution here to help diffuse the tensions. We think U.S. pork can help China manage food price inflation. We can help the U.S. put a big dent in the trade imbalance and hopefully generate some goodwill. But these issues are really tough between the U.S. and China. And We want certainty, and that's what producers want, right? And nothing could be more certain than, hey, 5 years of zero tariff trade. Are we going to get there? Obviously, it's going to be very difficult to get the Chinese to agree to it, but the administration is pushing hard, and we appreciate that.
That was Nick Giordano, Vice President and Counsel for Government Affairs at the National Pork Producers Council in Washington, D.C. Stay tuned to Week in Ag Matters for more news and information.
It's time to take back control of your seed ROI. The F2F Genetics Network seed brand from Farmers Business Network puts farmers first. Corn seed starts at just $110 per bag for conventional and $165 for traded. F2F Genetics can provide farmers with high-performing seed at industry-beating prices. We're eliminating the middleman and bringing genetics straight to the farmer from the breeder. Learn more at F2FGenetics.com. F2F Genetics Network seed is offered by FBN Inputs, LLC, only where licensed.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
Animals have helped shape this land for centuries. One indigenous animal is the icon of the United States. In fact, it's our national mammal. It's the bison. Like others in agriculture, the bison industry has faced its ups and downs in 2019, both domestically and internationally. I talked with Dave Carter, Executive Director of the National Bison Association, and bison producer Dick Gehring at the NAFB convention earlier this month. Here's what they had to say.
So Dave, the 2019, how have things been for the bison industry?
Well, we see our business continuing to grow. More and more people are discovering not only is bison healthy and environmentally sustainable, but it's pretty darn delicious as well. And as we get that message out, we're continuing to grow our business. We have some challenges coming up this year. You know, we've been addressing the issue or trying to address the issue over the last few years of water buffalo coming into our market, just labeled as water as buffalo. And I'm making sure that we get that addressed. Senator Hoeven out of North Dakota, Senator Bennett in Colorado teamed up on a bipartisan bill to address that. We're working with pet food regulators to work on that as well. So those are some challenges. And of course, right now, our producers are facing the challenges that our neighbors in the cattle business have got with all of the wet weather and everything else going on out there. But from a marketing standpoint and the growth of the marketplace, we're just really positive, really excited.
Good. So, Dick, as a producer, you know, the things that you're seeing out there, you know, we talked about the wet conditions, but, you know, raising that herd and getting that herd going through a year like this, how has it been?
Well, you know, for the areas that got probably their annual rainfall in the first 6 months, that can be a little tough and a little challenging in that the grass becomes, you know, washy and nutrition just isn't there. And so you have to, you either make adjustments or you, you know, suffer the consequence, whatever. But this animal's really resilient. That's one of the bison advantages that we love about it is even though the calves had a little bit of a tough start, as we get into a drier climate and the grass dries out and starts packing in the protein, those little guys are catching up really, really fast. In some areas of the state, I'm from here in Kansas, in some areas of the state, the weaning weights are a little low because of that. In other areas, they're just as high or even higher. So an amazingly resilient animal that evolved with the ecosystem here and so it works pretty well.
Well, you know, and it's something that Dave and I have talked about in the past. You know, you think about cattle or horses or bison, this is their home field. I mean, when you go back to the ancestor, this is their home field. They should be able to adapt to it better than anybody.
Oh, they are adapted to it. They evolved with the grass, and the grass evolved with them to the point that when the warm season grass goes dormant, they actually start into a process that we call their dormancy. And by December through, say, February, March, their nutritional needs are about 15% less on the adults. And so when there's not a lot of protein out there to be had, their needs are less. They're so used to the cold weather in through the states that the hair is so thick. If you've got an overcast day and the temperature's at 31 degrees, the snow doesn't melt on them from the body heat. So they don't use a lot of calories to stay warm. So when, you know, other people are out there making sure that every animal they have is fed and, and refed and refed. We're sitting in the house by the fire reading a book.
So when we look at, you know, how people are raising cattle this time of year or raising other animals, what is it that, you know, bison, what's their schedule like? I mean, what are we, what kind of year are we coming into them? Is it kind of similar to the schedule that cattle ranchers would have through the winter, or they get ready to sell them in spring? Or
yeah, our time right now is it's gathering season to get the calves worked and weaned and you know, do the normal annual practices that you do. Once we get that accomplished, then you can kind of coast for the rest of the winter if you're a cow calf operator. And like I said, they're adapted to it, so it becomes pretty easy once you get the work done. And working with the animal and setting your system up to be their idea, for it to flow to where they want to do what you want them to do, works really well. If you're trying to force kind of the old ways on them, you're setting yourself up for a battle. But we've all had those battles, and hopefully most of us have learned from our mistakes, and it's an easier process now.
So in the domestic area here, as we look and going into 2020, what kind of things are you hoping to see accomplished or to help the industry go forward?
Well, as Dave might have mentioned earlier, he's been doing a lot of promotions, hitting kind of the social media and those kind of things, and mommy bloggers and getting the message out to folks that are eating green, that are really paying attention to what their animal, what their protein's being fed, what it's not being fed, you know, what chemical free and all that kind of thing. And that's speaking really, really well to our consumer base, and they're catching on to that, you know, and not to mention they love the taste, so it makes a good combination.
Now, Dave, you know, we talked about some of the problems with the domestic issue, but, you know, we don't always talk about the international and the trade issue. And, you know, just like beef and pork and all these other commodities, you guys have a market you're trying to build and work with internationally as well.
We do. And, you know, we have a lot of challenges ranging from the frustration that we have that the European Union, you know, the beef industry did a really good job a few years back putting together the high quality beef export program, where if they could demonstrate that they have meat that's produced without growth hormones, they can go in with no tariff. And you think that would be a natural for bison, because it's illegal to use growth hormones in bison. But because it's called the beef export program, we're not eligible. So every ounce of bison that goes into the EU has a 20% tariff on it. So we're trying to get that addressed. And then we have some other markets where, because of the BSE incident a few years back, even though we've never had BSE in bison, those markets were closed to bison, and so we're working with USDA to get them open. And we're really excited. Mexico is on the verge of opening for bison exports. We expect it to be actually within weeks. And USDA, for the first time ever, invited two of our bison companies to go along on a trade delegation to Mexico last week and at least start to grease the skids to meet with the distributors and the marketers there. So, yeah, we see not only are there opportunities for us to continue to build the market here in America, but also other countries, give them their first taste of delicious bison as well.
So we got listeners in Iowa, you know, it's not always, you know, you're not always finding bison in places on every corner around in Iowa. So if there are people out there that want to find out, where can I get this stuff? How do they do that?
Well, we actually have a new app, thanks to a grant that we got through USDA's Farmers Market Promotion Program. We have an app that's called Buy Some Bison, B-U-I-S-O-M-E, Bison. You download it and you can go in there, you can put in your address, or you can tap on the map and you can find producers not only in your area, but it'll list, do they sell directly off the ranch, do they sell at a farmer's market or supply a local restaurant, or maybe they have agritourism if you want to take your kids out to a bison ranch or have a wedding out there, they might even offer that. So yeah, download Buy Some Bison. That's a great new app that we have.
All right, so as we get ready to go into 2020, what's the message you got for the producers and for consumers out there?
Well, the message that we have is, in fact, we've just trademarked the phrase "nature's original plant-based protein," because we know there's a lot of noise out there in the marketplace about all these plant-based proteins. But when you think about this animal that evolved over thousands of years with this ecosystem and really helped shape the landscape and create the grasses that are out there, what could be a cleaner plant-based protein than locally, naturally raised bison?
Yeah, they've been the original conservationists of this continent.
Absolutely. You know, when you look at this landscape, it does bear the hoofprint of the bison.
That again was Dave Carter, the National Bison Association, and bison producer Dick Gehring. You can find places to purchase your Iowa-grown bison by downloading the Bison Bison app. We'll be back on Weekend Ag Matters right after the break.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters, and now, here's Ken Root.
We repositioned ourselves between dawn and dark a few weeks ago as we engaged in that semi-annual ritual of spring forward and fall back that leaves us with jet lag without going anywhere. I love daylight, and I often curse the darkness. But it's a fact that the seasonality of our latitude is going to give us long days in summer and long nights in winter. Should we oppose the rhythm of the seasons or just accept God's providence? Well, as humans, it's almost assured we'll do the former. Daylight savings time was first conceived at the turn of the 20th century by a New Zealand entomologist. He wanted to have more time after his office job so he could hunt bugs in the daylight. The time change was cussed and discussed, but it didn't catch on until World War I, and then it went away and came back briefly in World War II, then was abandoned until the energy crisis of the 1970s. For farmers, the time really didn't matter as long as the sun was up. My father said he worked from sun to sun in the summer, and the only time he cared about was noon so he could stop and eat dinner. It showed how some people set their clock by the sun and others set it by their stomach. As more people worked in businesses and factories, they found they had the resources for leisure activities but didn't have the time. The concept of moving the clock ahead by an hour in spring was a brilliant way to trick our bodies into getting an extra hour in the evening. Some people love it so much they would move 2 hours ahead during peak daylight period, so the effect could be even more pronounced. Despite the extremes of travel that I've taken to try to get into full daylight in the middle of summer in the Arctic regions, I like to stay in one place and watch the seasons. The wobbling of the earth to create winter and summer in both hemispheres can be credited to a higher being, or the physics of a spinning object, but its effect has made the planet productive. Seasons challenge the status quo and cause diversity by adapting behavior. Rabbits that are brown in summer turn white in winter to keep their camouflage in play. Predators grow a heavy coat in winter and shed it in springtime. Plants in temperate climates know when to bloom and drop their seeds so the next generation can weather the frozen ground and emerge when sun and rain signal the rebirth of spring. Man has also used the seasons to his advantage. I assume we originated in the tropics and lived our first millennia where days were about the same length and the weather was moderate. There was always something to eat as vegetation grew year-round. What made mankind move into colder climates was hard to understand, but the industriousness and aggressiveness of our species is magnified by those who live in the harsh climates. It took ingenuity to relocate our frail bodies into cold regions. We had to make fire and hunt animals for fur to have any chance of survival. We had to use tools to build shelter. Would we be who we are as individuals or as a species if it weren't for adversity? Some pushed it to the edge as native indigenous people moved to the polar regions and learned to survive in a land of perpetual ice. They caught fish, froze them into the shape that could be used by wrapping them in fur and strapping to the bottom of a sled as the runners. They domesticated wolves to become sled dogs and lived their lives only on animal products. They never learned to swim because the water was too cold, but they bravely ventured out in small boats to harvest the bounty of the sea. Now I sit here and whine about it getting dark early. I live in a house with so much insulation, I have to look outside to tell the time of year. Literally every vehicle has a heated cab, so microclimates allow us to stay comfortable year-round. If winter gets too menacing, we get on an airplane and fly to Florida, Texas, or Arizona, and join our friends sitting in the shade and watching the Weather Channel report on a Midwest blizzard. There's no doubt we have advanced society from the era of the primitive survival of our ancestors. Those of us who grew up in shotgun houses that barely slowed the north wind can remember the times that water froze in the kitchen and blankets were piled high on the bed to keep us warm enough in winter to make it to morning. It's a good life we live now. It's good to watch it pass by our windows as we determine how active we'll be in the cold season. It feels good to work late in the evening in summer and to come in before dark in the winter. As a vegetable farmer told me at a summer market, he worked almost nonstop to harvest his crop in the summer. He said, "It's time to work now. We can sleep next winter." I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thank you, Ken. And that's all for this edition of Weekend Ag Matters. We thank you for tuning in with us here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. You can find replays of this show as well as all of our other content online at iowaagnet.com. Don't forget to find us on Twitter and Facebook at Iowa Ag Radio. On behalf of myself, Anna Hastert, and Ken Root, we thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week on Weekend Ag Matters.